Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Welcome to Play to Win. Why is it so loud? Normally we're like, okay, I thought we were like normally there. Oh, I think it's because you're rumbling it so much. There's an extra. No,
yeah,
you're good.
That
you're
makes
good.
Sense. I'm trying to get this out.
Good luck. At a certain point, it'll violently release and slingshot you in the nuts. That's the built-in technique.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm glad you're recording. How much bigger is this silver part?
It's enormous. It goes on forever.
Wild. I can't believe I'm still...
This is the most incredible microphone stand you've ever seen in your life. That will go on forever. But for an infinitely less amount each pull, it goes.
I know.
If you were to pull for billions of years, it would become about a foot longer than that. But theoretically, it is infinitely long.
This is such a pain. Oh, my God. Here we go.
Wow, you avoided the smash. Very good.
This is not my preferred side. So
We're on swap side. I thought you're normally. Oh, the cameras are normally
the cameras
here.
Cameras normally on the.
Do you want to switch
side of me? Ideally, I would love to be on that side more. Do you want to move chairs too? I don't need your comfy chair. I can take this chair.
I'll take the comfy chair. That chair's really heavy, right?
It's solid wood. It's a good chair.
It's oak.
Oak. I'm sorry that I sprung this on you right now.
No,
I was
okay.
Going to live with it.
I did my
for
hair
today.
For that way, so now, and also the camera, I look fucking huge.
All right, let's go back.
No, we can do it.
No. Next week we'll do it. Next week we'll do it.
We just have to adjust the cameras.
We already sized the camera up.
You're the podcast guy. I'll listen to you. We got to move the chair back, too.
Okay. I should keep all this in.
This is what the people want. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about a grab bag, a hot stuff or not stuff. What are we talking about today,
Cam? We got
Cam?
A lot we're talking about today. I got a list of cards, and we're going to figure out if they're hot or if they're not.
Got it.
We're also going to take a look at some comments from some of the past videos that we've had recently.
Like
last week's podcast and the gameplay video that we did most recently. We're going to look at some of the comments there that made me laugh or brought up some really good points that I think we should address.
Cool.
So
I like
maybe that'll be like a standing thing that we do.
Yeah. Shout out the comments. Well, a lot of people will often point out when we are wrong, which is great. Please do that if we make a mistake. So we'd love to highlight some of that. And some of you, everyone is so great.
And if you didn't know that, now you know to go check the comments. To make sure we did everything right.
What's the first card on your list that we were talking about today for hot or not? This is now, from what we talked about earlier, these are cards that are generally good cards in CDH, but do we think they're strong right now in the metagame?
Exactly.
Yeah. Is that where we're at, kind of?
Or they were cards that I thought maybe are actually pretty good in the metagame, and maybe we can figure out if there's something here.
All right, I'm with you.
That
I'm here.
Doesn't make. I'm glad you are, because I don't think I made any sense with what I just said.
I would say 70% sense. I got it.
And that's more sense than I normally make.
That's
so that sounds great. Yeah, it's a C, and that gets degrees. So the first card I have here is Yoshimaru Everfaithful.
The dog,
yeah.
Yeah.
This is the white partner that goes along with Thrasios. He's just a white mana for a 1/1. Dog that gets a +1/+1 counter whenever you cast a legendary spell.
Is that what it is when you cast a legendary spell? I wasn't sure if it was like a legendary creature enters. That's one thing, and cast legendary spell might be another. I don't remember exactly.
Maybe I should say the right thing.
Realistically, while Cameron looks that up, that part is not quite as relevant as what it is just a one mana commander. It's a one mana partner. That's all it is. It's a Rograkh that's a little bit more mana, but allows you to be in white over red. Have you found it?
Yeah, it's whenever another legendary permanent enters the battlefield. Under
we were both kind of wrong. Okay, so yeah. Whenever a legendary permanent enters the battlefield. So Gaia's Cradle, boom, that's a trigger. Again, the plus one counter, from what I understand, not super relevant.
Right, yeah. It just allows you to be in white so that you can play cards like Grand Abolisher and Voice of Victory in your really good Gaia's Cradle Thrasios deck.
Fierce Guardianship, all the commander cards, everything that you want Rograk for, this kind of does the same exact thing in the colors that are available to it at just like a turn later, but a little bit safer.
Because he's one mana instead of having an absolutely free commander.
I think this card's hot right now.
I think this card is kind of hot right now, yeah.
With Gaia's Cradle, I feel like recently Gaia's Cradle has become like the premier explosive mana maker in CDH. That has always kind of been true, but like in the absence of Dockside, I feel like Gaia's Cradle has taken like a larger role in a combo piece with things like Derevi and Emil, which this deck uses very well. It always makes a ton of mana, and like playing things like Yoshimaru and a bunch of ways to get little cheap creatures into play just to make your Gaia's Cradle good and eventually win the game with it, like that to me is all great strategy right now. So for right now, I'm pretty hot on this card.
I think that also makes cards like Eldritch Evolution way better too, because like one is a lot more than zero, because yeah. Now like Eldritch Evolution allowing you to go find Derevi or allowing you to go find like any of the other super powerful three drop creatures that are out there, I think is super impactful for that deck as well.
That line just, I feel like, works so perfectly, that like Bant combo-y shell. I feel like we have like a very core combo thing right there with the Gaia's Cradle, Derevi, and Emil. Sisay, a deck that I'm playing right now, uses that really well too. Derevi itself, the actual commander, uses that. So I think this is just like a pretty good shell to build around right now, and Yoshimaru Thrasios builds around that shell pretty well.
And then they also do the Breeze Caller combo that we were talking about last week too, and I think that's super cool as well, because I'm gonna skip ahead to the comments section.
We got this wrong, right? We said we needed six or something and it's five.
You got it right. I got
nice.
It wrong, because I thought that Gaia's Cradle would have to tap you for seven mana so that way you could go infinite, but because Talongate's also taps for mana, right. You can use some of that mana to go into your Ouroboros Breeze Caller activation, okay. So that way Gaia's Cradle only needs six creatures in play to
only
have
six.
That go off.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. This deck can also play that line, right?
Yeah, exactly, because it just requires you to be in blue and green in order to do that.
Yeah, that's great. Talongate's. Someone needed to find the interaction with Talongate's in this card, which is why this wasn't good before. You needed a land that could put itself into play.
Exactly, yeah.
Is this a card that we're rating if it's hot or not? Or this is just relation to the last card we were talking about?
What card? Cradle?
The Ouroboros Breezer.
Oh, no, that's just in relation.
We can rate
if it's hot or not, though, too, because we're talking about
hot.
It.
Yeah, for it's me, it's hot.
I think it's hot right now, too.
Any of these ways, like Emil, that you can try to go infinite and someone says in response, I will kill your Emil, and you say, well, lucky for me, I have three more mana, I can try again. And on response to things you can activate and win on top of, this does that, Emil does that. I think that is a really good spot to be in right now, and also fits perfectly in that Bant shell.
Because those decks usually can make an embarrassingly large amount of mana.
And they
don't care if you try to interact.
Try again. We don't need counter spells. We just need mana. That's the counter spell.
Yeah, exactly.
Hot.
The next one that I want to talk about is Ral Monsoon Mage. I want to pull this guy up.
How many words do you think are actually on this card? I want to say at least 100.
I would say that that's probably lowballing it pretty well. Maybe on one side I could see that. Ral Monsoon Mage is one and a red for a 1/3 human wizard. Instant and sorceries that you cast costs one less to cast, and when you cast an instant or sorcery spell during your turn, you flip a coin. If you lose the flip, Ral deals one damage to you, and if you win the flip, you may exile Ral, and if you do, return him to the battlefield transformed under his owner's control, and he becomes the Leyline Prodigy, which is now a planeswalker. He enters with an additional loyalty on him for each instant and sorcery spell that you've cast, so he's supposed to come in with two, but realistically it sounds like you should be able to ultimate him right away.
If you've cast a bunch of spells.
Like four of them or something like that. Or if you've cast like six of them, you can ultimate him right away.
Right away, because he starts with two and then he gains the other loyalty counters right from there.
Exactly, yeah. Which is really the good stuff, because it lets you exile the top eight cards of your library. You may cast instant and sorceries from among them this turn without paying their mana cost.
Yeah.
And I know it's really weird to start reading a planeswalker from the ultimate, but it's realistically something that you can get to the turn that he flips over.
Especially if he's your commander, if your deck is built to do this specifically. And I guess guess you're not really playing any decks that aren't built to do storm stuff. If he's your commander specifically, at least the one time that I have played against this card, the ultimating was like a main focus of the deck. There was a situation where he was able to ultimate his planeswalker twice in the same turn, which like -8, still alive, like flicker it or something, flip it again and ultimate it again. It really goes fucking crazy.
I've seen this doing pretty well in other tournaments as well, which is why I wanted to put this on the list too. I mean, he's got other abilities. His other minus ability deals some damage to things. You can draw a card if you control a blue permanent other than Ral, which is like okay, but not worth flipping him for. And then his plus ability is basically the same thing as his front side, giving your instants and sorceries a little mana discount.
I have thought about playing it in something like Rog'Sylas or another type of storm deck that it doesn't have him at the helm. I'm not exactly sure if that's right. In the right spell slinger deck, I feel like it kind of makes sense.
And I know that like Krark Sakashima was testing him out when the card had first come out. I feel like I could see this in like the Grixis Krark deck too that you played.
Because
I feel like a deck that wants to just try to brute force luck card after card after card kind of likes having this big of a mana discount.
The reduction makes Cabal Ritual much more easy to do, cast a couple times if you get some tails on it or something.
And then that way, if you miss a flip on a Demonic Tutor,
kind of free.
Yeah, it's kind of free, right? Like it gives you more opportunities to kind of keep going for what you're actually looking for.
Can we pause real quick?
Yeah.
I feel like, can I move this or is this too late?
No, it's fine.
Because it's like, you're too profile-y.
Oh, God. My profile looks so bad.
I think they think this looks much better.
My profile is like, oh my God, what happened to his hairline? What is going on with him?
Oh, I'm working on it. I'm working on the background. It's changing. We're figuring it out still. I haven't taped it down yet.
I was going to say we're recording on a different day. We're wearing the same clothes, but it's a different day.
Can we talk about something that has to do with Ral as we're rating it, if it's hot or not?
Yeah.
But I'm going to throw a small curveball at you because it just got spoiled. The Final Fantasy Vivi... I know the card you're talking about.
Yeah, this card is a very iconic looking character that I recognize from Final Fantasy, but didn't know anything about him until now. Now I know everything about him. This is Vivi Ornateer. This is one, a red and a blue for an 0/3 legendary wizard. For 0 mana, you can add X mana in any combination of blue and or red, where X is Vivi's power. Activate only during your turn and only once each turn. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's good. That's good to say there. Yeah. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Vivi, and it deals 1 damage to each opponent. Yo, this is way better than Ral.
The mana-making ability is super sweet, but the way that it works with Curiosity is incredible. Because you put a Curiosity on this, and you cast any spell, you draw 3 cards.
Ah!
Every non-creature, Rite of Flame, draw 3 cards. Jessica's Will, draw 3 cards.
And then when you teeter out, then you VV for like 8 mana.
Bunch of mana. I've been drawing all these fucking cards. Let's dump them all out.
This card's a real card. Looks too good. I want to play this card so bad.
You have Curiosity, you have Tandem Lookout, you have the 3 mana one, Ophidian Eye.
Yeah.
And then you also have Imperial Recruiter to find the Tandem Lookout. And there's like a Niv-Mizzet that works with it too. It's like a 6 mana. I don't know if you want to, but...
You probably want to. You're playing Vivi as a commander, right?
In my head right now, you're playing Vivi as a commander. Maybe Ral goes in a Vivi deck. They're kind of both in a similar vein of like, is it spell slingers?
I feel like Ral is good for the flip ability.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you have Vivi and a Curiosity, you're arguably rallying because you'll be able to have the mana to do all the stuff that you draw anyway.
It's so hard to rate cards before they come out and before we see them. Izzet has a hard time finding enchantments and creatures, which is what your combo pieces are. There's a few ways, but there's not a ton. There's also like some of the, you discard them and then you can tutor for something that has the same mana value. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm sorry. I was busy taking a screenshot because I want to build this thing later today.
The cards that you can, transmute cards.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Some of the transmute cards can work as tutors for some of your combo pieces in this Vivi, right? Vivi is the name?
Don't ask me to know how to pronounce that.
I'm sorry
I've never
about that.
Played this game. I'm assuming it's Vivi because that's what a character in One Piece is, but I want to know.
Yeah, you probably are. We'll go with that until someone corrects us.
Okay, yeah.
But they're both going to take up a similar space in that Izzet realm of where Ral would exist, where maybe Krark and Sakashima exists, where maybe this exists. This one seems very, very good to me. So I'm going to say for Ral, not. But for this card, I'm going to say hot.
Oh, that's a, you know what? That is
curveball,
you know? And a bit of a hot take coming into this. But I think I'm going to agree. Knowing that Vivi exists, I'm much more interested in building around this as a
the
commander.
The curiosity thing seems way more fun,
seems
too.
Seems way
cast
more
spell,
fun.
Draw three cards.
Yeah,
cast
spell, exactly. Draw three cards. Yeah.
Get Daxian Probe, draw three cards. With Quark and Sakashima, that's good, but
that makes me just like, even want to play Gut Shot, just like more free stuff so that I can keep drawing cards.
Like, how much do you lean in? Do you go like as many non-creatures as possible?
Like, yeah, like how
maybe
do I do this?
You don't want to be in a situation where there's Drowned Magistrate and your hand is Gut Shot and Gush and all these like shitty cards.
No, but like you play Snap though. Like, I feel like
but
between Snap and like you get to also play Snap back, yeah. Like all of the spells that require you to exile stuff from your hand. Like, I'm interested in Commandeer. I'm interested in Misdirection, even potentially because
Misdirection more than Commandeer, I think.
Because I feel like you'll have like such a huge amount of cards in your hand if every
sometimes,
spell
yeah.
that you cast nets you two additional yeah. cards. Like, it not only replaces itself, but it finds the next two things you're gonna do as well.
Yeah.
Non-creature, it's not just instant or sorcery.
Let's read it again and double check what it all does, because I've already forgotten how the mana ability works.
Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, so like the free rocks that you
artifacts
find
too
also count.
Yeah. Mox Diamonds, yeah.
You put a +1/+1 counter on Vivi and it deals one damage to each opponent. And for zero mana, add X mana in any combination of blue and or red, where X is Vivi's power, you activate it once a turn.
Do you play any of the blue flicker spell?
No, that completely bums out your Vivi then. And then you lose all the counters that you were working up
you do
toward.
Lose the counters, but you get to use the mana ability a second time.
I think there's blue. Oh.
Is that
yeah,
good?
Yeah, but you have to start over again, though, right?
Well, not necessarily. I don't know that the counters are as relevant. Maybe it's like you attack first, do a bunch of damage, flicker, and then you keep on ping, 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 draw, 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 draw.
No, I think you're right.
I don't know. The counters, they're fine. I don't know that they're relevant.
I was
irrelevant.
Thinking you meant in a protection setting, in which case you play like the phase spells, the one mana phase spells that would like let you keep the counters. But
I want to reset that mana
but
ability,
I see what you mean, right? Like, you blink. Oh, there's a blue spell that blinks it and brings it in with a +1/+1 counter, isn't there?
Essence Flux, maybe.
Yes,
that's
right.
The one
so
I'm
you blink
about.
It and it comes. That might be two mana, but either way, there's
a
one
mana version.
There's
of
a
this.
One mana version of it that you would play the 2 mana one that has it come in with a counter anyway, right?
Yeah, probably.
Because if it also helps your Vivi get bigger than two right away, I say thumbs up.
Because eventually you're going to draw a bunch of cards, but you will get funneled on mana. But if you can activate, make a bunch
yeah.
of mana, cast those spells again, and then you'll get funneled again. You'll need to like flicker Vivi, activate, make a bunch of mana. Like,
I would want to flicker Vivi the second that I activate it, and then after I've drawn all those cards, I flicker Vivi after I've made like 8 mana, yeah. and then Vivi comes back. Now all the spells that I have with the 7 mana that I have left, I'm going to use to get Vivi up so that Vivi can get back to 6 mana.
Because you need to build up her power first before
exactly.
you pop the mana thing.
So then you build back up to like 6, yeah. then you activate for 6 mana, use one more to flicker, and then they come back in.
Ghostly flicker? 3 mana is way too much, right? You don't
ghostly
care
flicker,
about two objects?
Yeah, but then like, what if we just like also played Narumeha? And you
is this
did
a
the
wizard?
Narumeha combo. This is a wizard, yeah.
Is this a, oh, how does it work? Does Narumeha double the trigger of the wizard? Oh, wait.
Narumeha is the one that combos with Ghostly Flicker so that you can flicker Narumeha and the sand land
yes.
that deals a damage to each opponent.
So if you were to double the triggers, it would deal one damage to each opponent twice, which means if it had Curiosity on it, you would draw 6 cards. Do you know what I'm saying? If you have a Harmonic Prodigy out or a way to double the Vivi trigger, it'll deal 3 damage twice, which means if you have Curiosity on it, you'll draw 6 cards.
You're absolutely correct.
That's good.
That sounds really good.
That's
Harmonic
good,
Prodigy sounds really good here.
Right? And like Roaming Throne and
Vryn. You get to play Vryn in that deck too.
Vryn. Wait, isn't Vryn the rat?
No, that's the card I want to talk about is the blue-red one with Prowess.
I think that one's also called Vryn.
I don't know what it's actually called, but I can't imagine they named two legendary creatures the same thing.
I think it's Vryn. Can you look it up?
Yeah.
I think Vryn, Vryn, is the rat that we just played on the gameplay.
So Vryn is the name of the place that Jace is from.
Oh, shit.
Vryn's Prodigy.
Oh, right. Vryn's Prodigy. That's where we're getting at. I have it in one of those binders over there, but that's so far.
What if I type in VR?
Does it say Storm? Maybe look up... Blue red cards that say Storm.
Blue red text says Prowess.
It doesn't say Prowess. It says like.
It doesn't have Prowess?
It does something similar. It like does something that's like Prowess, I think.
No, the problem was I hit colorless accidentally.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't that. Yeah, no, you're right. It does do something that's
it's like something like prowess.
Veyran is the Veyran. Name of the card we're looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, you can play Veyran in this deck. What's
it
do?
It's Magecraft. I knew it had a word that was in italics on it.
But it also gives a boost. It gives a pump to... What's the pump effect that's not prowess?
If you casting or copying an instant or sorcery spell causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So actually, it is less good because the Harmonic Prodigy will let VV trigger twice if you cast Lotus Petal, but Veyran won't let it copy it if you cast a non-creature.
Yes, okay.
It's only the instant or sorcery.
Okay, yeah. I understand what you're saying. Veyran is a little bit worse, but I think you still try it out in this deck, right?
Or I would still try it out.
It's at least in the considering pile. It's got to be.
Yeah, because sometimes drawing six cards instead of three also still feels good.
What is the plus ability? What is Veyran? Veyran gets big in a way that's not prowess, but similar. I'm sorry. I just need to know.
It's a Magecraft ability.
So when you cast or copy, it gets +1/+1?
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Exactly.
That's what the Magecraft is.
But it's cool too because that means that Veyran would also give VV more +1/+1 counters too, which I think all of those cards, Harmonic Prodigy, also giving you more +1/+1 counters, not just more damaging cards, but then also allowing VV to be more mana after that.
Any combination of red and blue, right?
Any combination of red and blue.
Yeah, that's really good with the Frantic Searches too.
Really
you use
good,
that
yeah.
mana to untap your other lands here and then you have more mana again.
That is really good. Yeah, VV, hot.
VV,
Ral,
very
not.
Hot. Ral, very not.
Wow, yeah.
Ral's still probably good.
Ral's still probably good. But
this card's nuts,
I would
seems.
Put Ral in this deck, but I want to look at that. Wow, that was awesome. I'm glad we went off the rails on VV a little bit. That was sweet.
That deck is going to be cool.
All right, the next card that I have is Amphibian Downpour.
Oh, woof. This card's good.
Woof is absolutely right.
They're printing storm cards again.
What is it called? Downpour.
Amphibian Downpour.
It's easier to spell Downpour, but I didn't even spell that right. All right, so Amphibian Downpour is 2 and a blue for an aura that has Flash and Storm, and it's an enchant creature. Enchanted creature loses all abilities and is a blue frog creature with base power and toughness, 1/1.
It is a permanent effect. You permanently turn that thing into nothing.
But you could also permanently turn multiple things into nothing.
Yeah. So at 3 mana is kind of a lot, but being able to shut off everyone's commander. Everyone's commander is a frog, or Drannith Magistrate, Opposition Agent, and the Magda, all frogs, and they can't do anything. They can't cast them again. They're not destroyed. It's not that the commander's getting destroyed. You know what I mean? Like, they can't just recast it. It's there. It's just a frog. This card's really good, and it's also, like, a really good political tool.
I think so, too. I understand why it's good in Marnius, because if you have Marnius out, each one of these copies is a token copy. So they each enter the battlefield at a different time, because each storm copy resolves individually. So the one resolves, Marnius sees it come in, and then you draw a card. And then the next storm copy resolves, Marnius sees it comes in, and then you draw a card.
The tokens aren't entering technically at the same time. So Marnius, although it says forever, each instance you draw a card, they're all separate instances. Right?
And when you make a spell copy of a permanent, they enter as a token copy of that thing.
And Marnius doesn't care which side it's entering, though?
No, because you control it. So it doesn't matter. If you pacifism someone else's creature...
Technically, you're putting it on their creature, but you control it.
But it's your enchantment still.
It counts towards your devotion.
That's why if someone would besage you it on their creature, you, the owner, would be able to search your library for a land. So
Marnius is good.
Marnius is really good, yeah. So, like, that's the thing. It's really good in Marnius, but I don't know what other deck I am clamoring
for
this
right.
card in.
Yeah, and Timna Thrasios, I'm not really interested in this one.
Any of your four color piles, I don't think I'm really interested in this.
The removal isn't really the interesting part. For Marnius, it's the fact that you theoretically draw a bunch of cards while also shutting down your opponent's stuff. So I guess it does kind of make sense.
And
that's
a deck that I feel like would want a Wrath, because it takes a while for it
to
slower set
deck.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the decks that like want Wraths, I can also understand why you would want something like this, but it also feels situational as a Wrath though too, because you have to set up a scenario where a lot of things can go right for you, and sometimes the thing that is preventing that is like a rule of law creature then, which I guess doesn't come up as much, but then like this stops that from being super good.
I do like the fact that you can try to talk to your opponents a little bit and say, hey, if you cast some spells, you can make my storm bigger so I can amphibian down four and get rid of a bunch of things. While when you are doing that, you're getting your opponents to get stuff out of their hands, which means that it's less interaction or whatever that's going to do anything against you. So it can be kind of a good political tool where your opponents might have to say, damn, we kind of have to because we need to get rid of two things. You put them in a bind and then you get to get, as especially as a Marnie's player, you get a couple extra draws and can do a little bit more with that, right?
That kind of convinces your opponents to tap out in scenarios where maybe it's not advantageous for them to tap out.
Boom.
You can untap and then win the game like Gold Sabretooth did to me in the tournament before, yeah. Right? So like it is, and he was playing Marnie, so it's yeah. super good,
it's a good
in
move,
that scenario.
Yeah.
It gets him a ton of extra cards, and then I can turn someone from being not threatening and like actively helping the table suppress a win into being the winning guy instead.
Yeah. So that definitely, that's a good card, but is it hot or not right now?
I'm going to give it a not plus.
A not, okay. A not plus.
A not plus is what I'm going to give it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was kind of high on it right away. I came out the gates a little bit hot in this.
Because it does do really good
it
things.
It does do like, really good
the
things.
The scenarios when you can set up where it does shut off Dreadnought Magistrate, Valley Flood Caller, Opposition Agent, and then lets you win the game feels really good at instant speed.
Right now, in my experience with CDH, the games that I win are not the games that I get rid of stuff. They're the games that I go around stuff. The interaction kind of feels to me like what I have to play, not what I'm excited to play around. Although Amphibian is a cool card and can do a lot in Marnius, I think I'm going to agree with you, except I'm going to give it a full not. I don't really like this card right now. Or I shouldn't say I don't like it. I do like the card. I don't think it will lead to me winning games of CDH. That's what I mean.
I don't like someone trying to use it on like a Dreadnought Magistrate. They put Underworld Breach on the stack and then someone else bounces the token copy of Amphibian Downpour back to their hand. And then now that doesn't actually put Amphibian Downpour back in their hand. You're back under the stacks piece that was stopping you.
Right.
So
it's not a aggressive card. It's a very defensive card.
I'd rather play Swords to Plowshares, I think. And even then, that's the next card on the list that I have. It's
Ooh, okay.
A one white, you exile a creature, and then the creature's controller gains life equal to its power.
I've been a little bit off of this one recently.
I've been thinking about that too, because I'm trying to transition from Thrasios Timna into Blue Farm.
Yeah.
And I really like that it's at one mana, and I really like that it answers a lot of really good things, but that's the problem, is that I feel like it's an answer.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've been looking at it and go, oh, this deals with Stella Lee in this pod really well. Oh, this deals with, like, this creature really well. But up against Rog'Sai, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's very true. Against certain decks, it is a kind of a blank card. I mean, it could exile a Burgi or something. You know what I mean? It could do something against Rog'Sai, but I agree, not a ton.
Yeah, it doesn't stop your win condition, which is, I feel like, what I want. In a deck where I'm already playing blue, why wouldn't I just replace it with a bounce spell that's going to still do what I need it to do for the time that I need it to be done? And be more flexible because it can also deal with any other permanent type and be pitched to Force of Will.
Yeah, that's very true. All of those points make a ton of sense. I mean, I play Swords in Timna Thrasios because I feel like in Timna Thrasios, answering is okay, but I have lost a lot of games recently with Timna Thrasios.
So no, I would agree with you there, though, that answering's okay in Timna Thrasios.
Yeah,
you're like looking for stuff like
you
that.
You just need a little bit more time sometimes. Like
yeah.
You just need the more time. But in something like Sisay, I'm actually not playing Swords, and I'm not positive that's right. Swords is a fine card in Sisay. I personally like Dismember more than Swords because the colorless aspect of it, Sisay is so pip intensive. I want that white pip for Alotho or for the Sisay herself or for an activation or something, whereas I want to use my extra soul ring mana to cast the Dismember, the removal spell. You know what I mean? So that flexibility in a very pip hungry deck like Sisay, I like that a lot more
than
Swords.
That's true. Your soul ring gets way worse after it's been used to cast Sisay because
right.
You can't cast any of the creatures in your hand and it's not helping you activate Sisay 99% of the time.
Unless I have the Agatha Soul Cauldron or something, it doesn't help me activate Sisay. It can help me like cast for half of a Bloomtender and an Orcish Bowmaster, but then I got to get the Bowmaster in early.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. Now you can't flash Bowmaster.
Realistically, it's just going to be one mana color generic for some of the other legends that I have to play because they're just in my hand. So yeah, Soul Ring's not so great. So having Dismember to work well with that, not saying Soul Ring's not great. It's still a great card.
Yeah.
I'm still playing
but
it,
but it's
right?
Like it's less good in more scenarios in your deck than it is in Thrasios Roger, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Swords to Plowshare, for me, not. The card is cool. In certain decks, it's great, but I don't think it's specifically well positioned right now.
Which is weird because I feel like creatures are super important to decks right now. I feel like a lot of the combos involve a creature or two.
Yeah.
They involve like creature activated abilities or something like that. So I feel like it is important to have something like that, or you would feel like it's important to have something like that. When in reality, I'm also going to run into Underworld Breach, you know, the same amount of time. I'm going to run into other decks that are playing combos that even I might not know and be aware of. And if I'm staring at Swords to Plowshares while they're going through a sorcery thing, you know, I want to make sure that I have something that can respond to like an artifact combo if I need to.
Yeah, and I think with the recent printing of Into the Flood Maw, that has given like Swords to Plowshares like a push, like a real, I think, a real contender for the slot, because now there's another one mana catch all that catches a little bit more stuff. And the bounce is not the same as Exile, it's different, but in a very like tempo oriented format like CDH, where like timing is everything, that bounce can be all you need. It just end step bounces Drowneth Magistrate. That's as good as Exile because I'm about to win the game.
Dude, how many times do you look at your hand and go, or you hear someone after the game go, oh, I could have won if I got into my next turn.
Right, yeah, right. Everyone's always right about ready to win.
You don't need to exile the thing forever. Like a lot of times just getting it gone for the turn is enough for you to be able to buy time to untap and then win yourself. So if you are in a spot where you are playing blue, I think that's where it is, right? Yeah. Like if I'm in Naya, I think I'm still interested in Swords to Plowshares. But if I'm in blue specifically, I am way less interested in Swords to Plowshares now.
Yeah, because of Into the Flood Maw plus Chain of Vapor. Now that we have kind of two options.
Yeah.
Although those cards can be kind of different and don't necessarily all the time go in every deck together, we have two options that fit that similar one mana catch all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm with you. I think right now Swords to Plowshares is not.
Yeah, not. One fart noise for me. Should we talk about another card?
Yeah, I mean, like, kind of in the same vein, we have Chain of Vapor.
Oh, great. What do you want to talk about if Chain of Vapor is hot? I think Chain of Vapor is still hot right now, but this is another one that is super deck dependent.
I've been realizing that more and more, whereas I feel like when we started playing Chain of Vapor,
Staple, right?
It was a staple, and like every single deck was playing it. And now that I feel like I'm putting Blue Farm back together and I'm like considering again, part of me was like, why wasn't I playing Chain of Vapor? And then I was like, oh yeah, shoot, I'm not playing Seedborn Muse in this deck.
Yeah.
I'm way less concerned about it.
Yeah, and Tinmouth Thrasios, I'm much less interested in the Chain of Vapor effects because a lot of my combos and value engine stuff is like permanent base that someone is going to send back to me, and it's not like I can use that explosiveness to keep going. Underworld Breach deck can love a Chain of Vapor because you can use it on your own rocks, make more mana, sacrifice the lands to fill your Underworld Breach and keep going. It can be super, super great there, and when you bounce somebody else's thing, a lot of the time you don't have anything relevant in play because you haven't cast your Underworld Breach yet. You bounce their thing, what are they going to do? Bounce your Timna, who cares? Okay, bounce a Timna, cast Underworld Breach. It's much better in that deck, I feel.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Even if they bounce your Underworld Breach with the Chain of Vapor copy that they're making, like Underworld Breach is so cheap, and it's always something that you're able to control because it's in like your main phase that's doing that. Whereas like Seedborn Muse, this is going to come up like on someone else's turn when you need to Chain of Vapor because of how those decks play. You're interacting on your opponent's turns way more frequently, so they have the ability to, on someone else's turn, bounce your Seedborn Muse when you can't recast it then, and that puts you in a way bigger pickle.
I still think Chain of Vapor is a hot card. I think in the right deck, this is a removal spell that can help you win the game. It can actively make you mana. To me, that's just so valuable in CDH. Is like, I want as many as my removal spells to actually be combo pieces that get to double as removal spells. Talon Gates of Madara is another one. Where it's like, we were just talking about the Oboro Breeze Crawler. This is a combo piece. But when I need it to be, it's a removal spell. That's really good, I think.
Exactly, yeah. It turns crop rotation into that same thing then, too.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah,
I really like that. All right, so what are you giving Chain of Vapor? You're giving
it hot.
I'm going to give it hot minus just because I do want to give it that nod to decks that don't want to play it. But
yeah,
I'm going to say hot minus.
Okay.
I've been thinking a lot about like other cards that maybe I want to play instead of Swords to Plowshares, and like March of Swirling Mist hit my mind.
Yeah.
And then I remembered that March of Swirling Mist only hits creatures too, so maybe I don't want to play it.
This was one that when it came out, I think a lot of people were testing it, and as time has gone on, I've seen it get cut more and more and more. It's the fact that it at minimum still does cost that one mana, and when you start pitching cards to it, that can be tough, especially because the phase is temporary and you're discarding several things. Sometimes it'll be incredible, but I think it's too often where it's like just not good enough.
I think it will get better if stacks ever becomes more prevalent, which I think it will. I think slowly we're trying to get the meta to go from mid-range hell into a faster metagame.
Yeah.
And then once it becomes fast again, then stacks will pop back up to help slow down the fast decks. And by the time that comes up, that's when I think Marcius Williams is going to get better again. When you can remove multiple stacks pieces because you've had the time to build up multiple blue cards into your hand over the course of a few turns that you've had to go through before you're able to untap and then win on your turn.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely a super meta dependent card, I think is kind of what we're saying, is that like, yeah, if the meta slows down, March gets much better. For me right now, it's a not.
Definitely a not for me too.
But
yeah,
at some point in the future, could be very good.
Not minus even. I'll give it a not minus. Not minus. We're going to go even lower.
Sure.
That was a quick one. We're just going to keep firing along.
Chug along.
I just wrote down Sylvan Library is Michael Scott.
What's that mean?
There is a scene in the deposition episode of The Office where Jan says, you know, Michael is very underestimated. He's very good at a number of different things. Like ice skating. He's a very good ice skater. And it started getting me thinking about how like Sylvan Library used to be this card that was like super staple-y in CEDH. Like every single green deck was playing it. And now it's realized that it's so slow, so life intensive for the amount of value that you're actually getting. But in Atali, where I've realized that it helps you set up your Atali flip so that when you know you're going to get chunky out on your turn, you can like set it up so that the best card to get for free is going to be on top of your library and you didn't have to pay for life for it.
Or you get to like draw past it. You see the Chromox. Okay, let me draw the Chromox so I have enough mana for the Itali, because I see underneath of that Chromox three cards down, that's where the Blood Moon is or whatever you want to cast or something, right?
And if you have enough lands, you can just like leave the land on top and then underneath that put the good card that you want, be able to pay zero life, still play your land drop from your hand, and then Itali still gets rid of the land as it's going to the thing that you actually want to get. So
it's so great how Atali works so well with so many weird red and green cards.
It really
is.
It's
so
yeah.
It makes it so perfect. We were talking about recently how like how well it works with Gamble, and it just like it's so perfect with the new Electro duplicates.
Yeah.
And Squee, where Gamble just like works perfectly with Atali. Sylvan Library is another one where it just like not only does it give you that card draw that you kind of like desperately need to like maybe claw you out of mulligans, but it also helps you set up the Atali.
Yeah, exactly. So that is the ice skating. Yeah. That is ice skating. Yeah, setting up Atali is ice skating, and Sylvan Library is good at some things like ice skating.
It's a shame, though. This is a card that I have cut from Timna Thrasios, and for a while, that would have been like, I would have included that for sure. So it's definitely, along with Chain of Vapor, that at one point, 5 years ago, it was a staple, but recently we've gotten so many other draw engines, stuff like Esper Sentinel and Poliwag Prodigy. There's like a whole bunch of other like little card advantage that have sort of supplemented the role of Sylvan Library a little bit. And that life loss, like you said, is especially when you're playing like Treasonous Ogre or Ad Nauseam, all of a sudden that life loss is now like a real liability.
You get attacked immediately then. Yeah, that's still the side effect of Sylvan Library, is that people know, well, let's get him to stop drawing cards and let's just turn it into a Sensei's top activation every turn, which is way worse.
Right, yeah.
Miri's guy.
And once you become that target, especially after, like, I feel like a lot of the times with Sylvan Library, it's because you've mulliganed and you were able to keep the Sylvan Library and you already don't have much else, so you don't have a blocker yet. You know what I mean? All
exactly.
You did was the Sylvan Library, so now every forward life that you take is another card that you can't access.
Yeah, so I feel like it now is, like, fitting into this Swords to Plowshares category where I'll acknowledge that there are decks where because I'm lacking certain colors, I need this effect in order to help me get the card advantage that I need or be the removal that I need, you know, no matter what niche that it's actually fitting. But it's also like falling out of favor and there's more strategies that are disinterested in it actually.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a not for me right now. From my perspective, I'm playing Sissei, Timna Thrasios, and Rock'Sai, and I'm putting Taim together. Oh, wait, is it in Taim? It might be in Taim.
It might be in Taim.
Do you think Sylvan Library is in Taim?
You think you have the Taim to draw cards with Sylvan Library?
I'll still give it a not. Taim, even though I'm building Taim.
Right now, I'm transitioning from Thrasios Timna to Blue Farm, and then I'm playing Atali.
Yeah.
So technically, for me, in the decks that I'm looking at, it should be a hot.
It's hot,
but that feels like a really hot take. I don't feel like I can confidently say
that's why
Sylvan Library, hot.
That's why we call it hot. It's a personal temperature gauge for you. Oh. You're playing Sylvan Library right now.
Right
that's
now,
a hot card.
In the decks of mine that are playing Sylvan Library, it's really good.
Yeah. I also gave Swords of Plowshares a not, and I am playing it technically in Timna Thrasios.
I'm going to give Sylvan Library a hot.
All right.
And that's my hot take of the day.
I like that.
That sounds good.
I like
okay.
that for you. That it's great in Atali. So.
It is great in Atali. Yeah, it's been very helpful for me. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Have we come to a decision on if this card's good or not?
I think a lot of people think that it's very good. Counter a non-creature spell, that player gets two treasures.
Yeah, the two treasures is a lot.
And for a blue mana.
There's consistently more and more decks that can use the two treasures exceptionally well.
I think this is very similar to Swansong and Flusterstorm. Those are the other one mana counter spells that see a ton of play.
Ooh, yeah, but this is definitely worse than those two.
I think so.
So if you're looking for a third one mana counter, I think it's normally this one, but if you don't want a third one mana counter, this is like easily cuttable.
I put this with Chain of Vapor. If you're playing Chain of Vapor and you're the type of deck that wants to turn your spells into action sometimes, I like this as the ability to cast a Chromox with nothing to pitch, offer you can't refuse it, make two mana or something. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times it's filtering your mana. Sometimes you can convert a free spell that you weren't going to cast into mana when you need it. The two treasures is really nice if you're doing Thassa's Oracle stuff. So I like it in those type of decks that can use it for yourself. If you're playing Swords to Plowshares, I don't know that you're always playing an offer you can't refuse. Does that make sense?
I think that makes sense, yeah.
Like, if you're looking to answer stuff, I don't love this as like an answer. It's a backup mode to me.
It does feel like a backup answer because I was playing this in Thrasios Timna for a little while.
How did you like it?
I kind of liked it. Like, I like the versatility of it. And Thrasios Timna has so many answers, at least the version that like I like to play. It likes to have a lot of answers. So I feel like I can present more things if I need to. But there's
It is a very flexible answer.
But a lot of the decks that I started playing against is like, okay, Kinnan. Well, we're always playing against Kinnan, and that feels so bad against Kinnan. It felt bad against Quark Sakashima because counterspells already feel really bad against Quark Sakashima, and giving them more mana to keep doing the cheap things that they want to do to keep giving them other chances to do stuff also felt bad. And it feels bad into Magda, which Nate's playing now.
Yeah.
Because obviously.
Yeah.
So I think I'm ending up on it being a not.
Yeah.
And I feel like most decks really just want two one-mana counters, and they want Flusterstorm and they want Swansong, and you want as much free interaction as possible outside
of that. We have a ton of free interaction now.
Yeah, and I'm at a point in most of my decks now where I'd much rather be trying to do my thing than stopping someone else's thing.
Yep.
I'd much rather be actively only trying to stop win conditions than trying to stop even like card advantage or something else.
And this one is much better at protecting your win than it is stopping somebody else's win condition, I think, because realistically, you just want your thing to resolve, so you just need to counter their interaction. But it also gives them the treasure to cast the other interaction that they didn't have access
to. That's
the thing.
So it untaps them out.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm saying it's a not card right
now.
But I am playing it in Rog'Sai. So, according to my logic, I do think it's a hot card.
Because it is a protective card. So, I think it makes more sense in Rog'Sai. Like, if you're going to play it there, or if you're going to play, like, again, I think Thrasios Timna likes having a lot of different, you know, options at one mana to interact. But at the same time, my metagame got to a point where I no longer find it helpful to stop a win condition while I'm also giving away more treasures to help them reclaim because of the decks that I am playing against are actually taking so much more advantage of that. I guess if there's other decks that don't care about the treasures, or if I'm playing against decks that go, oh, I blow all my load and then I just, if I get stopped once, I can't recuperate for a long time. I feel like I like it in those matchups a little bit more, and I have not been seeing those matchups.
Having that flexibility of just like, I either die or I give you two treasures. Obviously, giving you two treasures is better than dying.
Yeah.
So in that situation, it's great. For me personally, it feels like it tricks you. It's like a demon or a genie or something. Like, it says, like, you can have all the money in the world, but you're going to get hit by a bus as soon as you get it. You know what I mean? Like, yes, you stop the win, but they have two treasures, so they can go again.
Underworld Breach, yeah. Right, okay,
you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Like, it's not a real win protecting. So I'm going to stand by not. I don't think this card's
there
right now.
I think I'm going to give it a not plus.
Okay.
Because there are scenarios that I think I would still play it, but I might be butting myself in the foot in those scenarios, though, and I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is just straight up not.
Not.
I'm going to give us one more card to talk about.
A final card.
Because I'm sick about talking about bounce spells that are bad.
Yeah.
Mnemonic Betrayal.
What does this card do?
So Mnemonic Betrayal is a sorcery that exiles all cards from opponents' graveyards. You may cast those cards this turn and spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast those spells. And at the beginning of the next end step, if any of those cards remained exiled, you return them to the owner's graveyards and you exile Mnemonic Betrayal.
This has been a card that I have not liked for a long time. I feel like too often it just doesn't do anything in my games. For some reason, people's graveyards are just not full. I'm not in like a turbo meta, I guess. I'm not really sure. There's just like not a lot of other whiffed full graveyards for me to access most of the time. Now, sometimes if the game goes super long, this card can be really, really powerful. But for me, it just like historically hasn't been. I have considered it, putting it into Rog'Sai recently because I do kind of want a little bit of like late game push that I'm kind of using Will of the Jeskai for right now because I feel like I can control that one a little bit more.
Okay.
But I've thought about Mnemonic Betrayal a lot recently of like maybe I should just, everyone else seems to love this card. Maybe I should just give it another shot.
If you want my advice, which you didn't ask for, so you can tell me to shut the
advice,
fuck up.
Advice.
I think that Mnemonic Betrayal is way better than Will of the Jeskai.
Yeah, okay.
I think that that helps you better off a little bit more in the late game than Will of the Jeskai will. Its mana value is a little bit less, and I know what you're saying is that like it does require your opponent's graveyards to be set up, but I think what ends up happening a lot with Mnemonic Betrayal is that it's between your hand, your graveyard, and their graveyards that you're able to set something up. Like, they don't need to have a ton. They might just need to have, like, a little bit of free mana and a tutor so that you can spin into, like, something else for yourself then, too.
Recently, I have seen with Born Upon the Wind and Valley Floodcaller, this can be used as kind of like an instant speed semi-interaction. Someone's going for their own breach line. Okay, I'll Mnemonic Betrayal, exile yours. And now I can not only probably go, but I've also stopped your win just in case I get stopped or
whatever. It's like the only way to deal with Lumra, too, when they're trying to go off.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
steal their graveyard temporarily.
Right, yeah. So, like, the fact that it can do that is also pretty cool. I think I probably should try it. I want to cast Will of the Jeskai a little more. It feels like a fun card, but
yeah.
More often than not, I think it's just going to be a 4-mana, discard my hand, draw 5, and that's it. And that's not really good.
I think that's the thing. Yeah, because like
Pass in Flames is just not going to come up a lot.
Pass in Flames works really well when you play like a bunch of rituals. And I don't know that Rite of Flame, Dark Ritual, Cabal Ritual, I don't know if like that's like enough to make that worth it.
Yeah, like I have to have that side of the mana. All of the artifact mana is less heavy. Like I have to have very specific pieces, which Mnemonic Betrayal also has to have very specific
pieces.
That's
true. And you can't really set up Mnemonic Betrayal in your Gifts and Givens pile the same way that you can Will of the Jeskai. I will give you that too.
Mnemonic Betrayal, I think, yes, is a very powerful card, and I probably should play it in Rog'Sai, and I have been thinking about it a lot. I'm still going to give it a not because I personally don't love this card.
I think that's fair. I'm going to give it a hot because I think that the turbo decks right now really need a way to be able to progress themselves to a win in the late game, and I think Mnemonic Betrayal is one of the easier ways to be able to do that where you don't have to worry about like you also having a full graveyard. Like you can just kind of take over what your opponents are doing instead. Like, there's some games where they're just going to have, like, a ton of mana in their graveyard, and you'll just be able to use that to help propel you to a win that you couldn't before and just use it as, like, a gnarly ritual instead.
It's a super flexible card, but just from my play style, the I don't know what the hell I'm doing with this until it happens, my brain can't make that work somehow.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. So I'll give it a hot, but I think that's cool that we're ending here on a both hot and not.
Hot and not.
Yeah.
Should we talk about a comment or two?
We should talk about a couple comments because we said that we were going to talk about a couple of comments here. So
you got him, let's see him.
We did reference a couple of comments already that talked about like the mistake that we made in the game.
Wait, which mistake that we made in the game? Not with Ouroboros?
Oh, no. Okay. We did talk about a couple of comments, like the mistake that I made with Ouroboros Breeze Caller, thinking that it required Gaia's Cradle to tap for 7. Let me see here. Oh, yeah. Look, someone did say, y'all gotta swap sides, so I'm used to the mic positions, LMAO. So
let's do it.
We'll
now.
Definitely have to. You want to do it right now? All right. We'll do it right now. Okay, that sounds.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
No, it's all right. All right, now we're officially back to normal. Oh man, my mic cord doesn't go as far. We got a couple comments about this too in the game. Would Malicious Affliction have gotten copied because Tyler's commander Vren, V-R-E-N,
yeah, Vren,
exiles things as they die?
Is Vren a replacement or a trigger?
Let's find out.
If Vren is a replacement, then yes, he shouldn't have gotten it.
If a creature an opponent controls would die, exile it instead. The if and instead give it away that it is a replacement effect.
So the thing does not die. So yeah, he shouldn't have gotten that thing there. He could have... No, you're right. Yeah, he couldn't. Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
It still luckily would have ended up the same way where like there were two copies of the... What's the name of that card?
Malicious Affliction. I deflecting swatted it over to Esper Sentinel. So we would have actually gotten the same result.
Yeah, you still would have deflecting swatted the one copy that would have targeted your creature, which was more important to get rid of, I think. And then you still would have swatted it. So I don't think the outcome would have been that different, really. But that's just something else that I thought was important to say. Gold Sabertooth did say, just drop in a note to Fearmonger, Cradle Control decks, which I think we talked about a little bit more today with Yoshimaru.
Yeah, oh, Fearmonger, like, they're good. We should all be afraid of them.
Yeah.
I agree, they are good. The Cradle decks are really powerful.
Here's something. The amount of games I've played where it's if I get one more turn, I could win happens so much. Let me start this over.
Okay.
The amount of games I've played where it's if I get one more turn, I could win happens so much. Okay, we were talking about that. Yeah. I think playing a stifle or two is fine. Also hits so many things and can do stuff through uncounterable effects. Your Veil or Cavern of Souls Atali, cool. Here's a Tashana's Hideous Tide. Here's a... I should have read this ahead of time and gotten some practice in, yeah.
Do you want me to try to read it? The amount of games I have played where it's if I get one more turn, I could win happens so much. I think playing a stifle or two is fine, also hits so many things, and you can do stuff through uncounterable effects. Your Veil or Cavern of Souls Atali, cool. Here is a T'Chana's Tidebinder, stifle the uncounterable Atali. It's not really card disadvantage for any ETB abilities, and for other abilities, the time is all you need. Also, I like T'Chana's Tidebinder for long-lasting creature stifle to hard stop other longer effects on creatures like Kinnan, Basalt Monolith, Untap, Magda, Sissei, Yuriko, and more. Running a stifle or two, I think, is perfectly fine. Also, saying it's card disadvantage is also technically the same thing for counterspells, which is true, where you are spending one mana to stop a spell where most decks can attempt to recast it somehow with graveyard since every deck has some sort of recursion. Yeah, that's all true. That's all true stuff. Most of the time, counterspells do the same stuff that stifles do, but can also counter spells.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there is a little bit of validity to the card disadvantage thing, but it's even more card disadvantage in the way that if you counter a Sissei activation, you're not getting rid of anything that they have on board. You just stopped some mana, which is not a good thing. I don't think countering for like mana disadvantage is actively something you would want to do.
All of those things are true, but other things just do more stuff. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Bounce spells,
yeah.
Counter spells, removal spells. It just does the same thing if you know what's coming and it does more stuff. The stifle effect is fun to think about because it puts them in a situation where like they feel blown out. They didn't see it coming. And that's like a fun feeling to get. But I just think like if you're looking for a high win rate, that's not the route yet. If you want to play stifle, you should play stifle.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I don't want to play stifle for the reasons that I mentioned.
I'll read one more comment here. This is from this last gameplay episode. Damn, Dylan, I really wish you didn't give up on Kruxai so quickly, LOL. I've been obsessed with the deck and it's so much fun, but I play a bit more of a turbo version that has all sorts of cool spice in the 99. Double Entomb off Krark to bin in Bolas the Citadel and Vilas, then reanimate the Vilas that turn and Welder the Citadel into play the next. It's so, so, so gross. Also, shout out to Yusri Fortune's Flame for being my sleeper pick for good card advantage. And the chance at a one-shot omniscience is insane.
Those things are true. I know. I switch off of decks a lot, and I feel like I'll get people hyped, and then I'll like switch to something else. I think part of just like what we have to do with Play to Win is like I need to know where like all the decks are, so I switch off of the decks a ton. And Krark is a cool deck. All of those things mentioned are cool things. I have thought about the reanimation thing, like double entombing and putting like Dread Return in Vilas in the graveyard, or Dread Return in Razaketh in the graveyard, and then sacrificing your Krark and then just going for Hoarding Broodlord or something. I have thought about going down that route, and so that sounds freaking awesome. Yusri, the card draw. That card is cool.
I've had that deal a lot more damage to me than draw cards over my course of time.
It seems more likely that it's a Sylvan Library more often than not. And what are the likelihoods you have to get five of the one side in a row?
You have to flip all five coins in a row in order to get the Omniscience.
What are the odds?
Very low.
What are the one in five out of five? Can we look, if you just Google what are the odds for five out of five? I would imagine it would be like surprisingly high, right?
Coin flip probability calculator. Number of flips, five. The probability of getting exactly five heads is 3.125%.
Oh, okay. 3.125. So roughly 3 times out of 100.
That's really
that's still low. That's still really low.
So that's what that is. So yeah, so Yusri, I don't think it's as good as it seems. I don't think that upside of Omniscience is as good, but
I understand
it can draw you some cards, but I think that that's Sylvan Library.
The coin flipping aspect, that the fact that you are flipping a coin, which works well with your other things that care if you flipped a coin, like Tavern Scoundrel,
yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? So that I like. It drawing cards with that, I like. The Omniscience effect, I see what you're saying, like you got to bring it up because it could happen 3 times out of 100. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But but not the pull for me on that one. But Karkstylus is still, it's still a cool deck. I just like Rock'Side more right now.
No, I think I get that. Yeah. I think that fits your play style a little bit more, just the more go all in on full speed and right. just send it right away.
Yeah, and I like knowing where I'm going a little bit better in CDH. And although Rock'Side does have some situations where I'm going to ad nauseum and hope that I find what I need, and sometimes I might not, most of the times I will. Whereas Quark, 50-50 shot, this ad nauseum is going right back to my hand.
You have to like replan after every game action right. that you take.
Honestly, it's one of the main reasons why I've been loving Sisse so much recently, is that by the time I'm going for the win in Sisse, I know I will win the game. Someone could interact, of course, but my line won't whiff. There's
it's
not
the
like,
same line.
It's not
yeah.
like I look through Sisse, my deck, and go, oops, I didn't find the right card. Like, as long as I know the line, like, I can't, like, sometimes with the Rock'Side lines, you necro for 30 and the Born Upon a Wind isn't there or whatever. You know, that happens sometimes. But with Sisse, it doesn't. So I like that a lot about Sisse right now. Just, I don't even know why I'm bringing this up. I just wanted to
just talking final, about why you're not playing Karkstylus. Yeah,
that's why exactly. I'm not playing Karkstylus. Yeah,
great. That sounds good.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons: Ben Gillette, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 0089, Ellie the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fires, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Zunon, Insomnia, SC Phillips, Old and Grumpy, Gecko 21, Zach Harley, Reactive, Sean on the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Joshua Day, Demon of Razgriz, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wilds, Uncle Butts, Kwaja Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to buy any of our merch, check us out at playtowinmtg.com.
Go to dragonshield.com.
And code PLAYTOWIN5 for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
John Koba, The Gaming Kinkajou, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poti, Justin Mansolo, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. Did you do the praying motion? Oh, damn, that's what we should have done. I should have had my ass crack showing, and then we did the pray motion.
And also, we're still working on the background. We're getting closer, but this isn't it yet. One or two more times. We'll experiment with some stuff.